Chapter 23. Our sons had returned from their work, windswept but dry. The thunder and rain had stayed out at sea. While the others ate their meal, I went up to the highest peak and felt the spell above me. From bay to bay it reached, from yellow sands to rugged stones. I felt it in my blood as well, that iron weight I had borne so long. Athena tested it, surely. She prowled the edges, looking for a crack. But it would hold. When I returned, Penelope was at the loom again. She looked over her shoulder.
It seems we have a break in the weather. The seas should be calm enough now. Telegonus, would you learn to swim?
Of all the things I had expected after our conversation, that was not one. But I had no time to think of objecting. Telegonus nearly knocked over his cup in eagerness. As they left through the garden, I heard him explaining my plants. Since when did he know what hornbeam was, or hemlock? But he pointed to them both and named their properties. Telemachus had come up silent beside me. They look like mother and son, he said.
It had been my thought exactly, but I felt a spurt of anger to hear him voice it. I went out to the garden without answering. I knelt in my beds and yanked up weeds.
He surprised me by following. I do not mind helping your son, but let us be honest. That sty you told us to fix has not been used in years. Will you give me something to do that is actually useful?
I sat back on my heels, regarding him. Royalty does not usually beg for jaws.
My subjects seem to have left me with some spare time. Your island is very beautiful, but I will go mad if I have to keep idle on it day after day.
What can you do then?
The usual. Fish and shoot. Tend the goats you do not have, carve and build. I could fix your son's boat.
Is something wrong with it?
The rudder is slow and unreliable, the sail too short and the mast too long. It wallows like a cow in any surge.
It did not look so bad to me.
I do not mean it was not impressive for a first try, just that I am shocked we did not sink on the way over.
It is charmed against sinking, I said.
How did you become such a shipwright?
I am from Ithaca, he said simply.
And is there anything else I should know about?
His face was serious, as if giving a diagnosis.
The sheep are matted enough to ruin the spring shearing. Three tables in your hall are unbalanced, and the garden path flagstones wobble. There are at least two birds' nests in your eaves.
I was half amused, half offended.
Is that all? I have not made a complete survey.
In the morning, you may fix the boat with Telegonus. As for now, we will start with the sheep.
He was right. They were matted, and after the wet winter, muddied past their shoulders. I brought out the brush and a large bowl filled with one of my drafts. He examined it. What does it do?
It cleans the mud without stripping the fleece.
He knew his business and went to it efficiently. My sheep were tame, but he had his own tricks of coaxing and soothing. His hand on their backs guided them effortlessly here and there. I said, you have done this before.
Of course. This wash is excellent. What is it?
Thistle, artemisia, celery, sulfur, magic.
Ah.
I had the trimming knife by then and set to cutting out burrs. He asked about the animal's pedigree and my breeding methods. He wanted to know if it was a spell that kept them tame or my influence. When his hands were occupied, he lost his awkward stiffness. Soon enough, he was telling me stories of his follies at goat herding, and I was laughing. I did not notice the sun drop into the sea, and I startled when Penelope and Telegonus appeared beside us. I could feel Penelope's gaze on us as we rose and wiped the mud from our hands.
Come, I said. You must be hungry.
That night, Penelope left dinner early again. I wondered if she meant to make a point, but her weariness seemed real enough. She was still grieving, I reminded myself. We all were. But the swimming had done my son good, or maybe it was Penelope's attention. He was red-cheeked from wind and wanted to talk, not about his father, which was still too much a wound, but his old first love. Heroic stories. There had apparently been a bard on Ithaca who was skilled at such tales, and he wanted to hear from Telemachus the versions that he told. Telemachus began. Bellerophon and Perseus, Tantalus, Atalanta. He had taken the wooden chair again and I the silver.
Telegonus leaned against a wolf on the floor. Looking between them, I felt a strange, almost drunken sense of unreality. Had it really only been 2 days since they had come? It felt much longer. I was not used to so much company, so many conversations. My son begged for another story and another, and Telemachus obliged. His hair was windblown from our work outside, and the firelight lay along his cheek. So much of him looked older than he was, but there was a sweetly made curve there that might almost be called boyish. He was no storyteller, as he had said, but that made it more enjoyable somehow, watching his serious face as he described flying horses and golden apples. The room was warm and the vintage good. My skin had begun to feel soft as wax. I leaned forward. Tell me, did that bard ever speak of Pasiphae, Queen of Crete?
The mother of the Minotaur, Telemachus said. Of course. She is always in the tale of Theseus.
Did anyone say what happened to her when Minos died? She is immortal. Does she still rule there? Telemachus was frowning. It was not displeasure, but the same face he had made when he examined my sheep wash. I saw him following the threads of genealogies through their tangle. A daughter of the sun, Pasiphae was said to be. I saw when he understood.
No, he said. Her and Minos's line no longer rules. A man named Leucos is king, who usurped from Idomeneus, who was her grandchild. In the story I heard, she went back to the halls of the gods after Minos died and lives in honor there.
Whose halls?
The bard did not say.
A giddy recklessness had seized me.
Oceanus is most likely. Our grandfather, she will be terrorizing the nymphs as she used to. I was there when the Minotaur was born. I helped cage it.
Telegonus gaped.
You are related to Queen Pasiphae, and you saw the Minotaur. Why did you not mention this?
You did not ask me.
Mother, you must tell me everything. Did you meet Minos and Daedalus?
How do you think I came by his loom?
I don't know. I thought it was, you know.
He waved his hand in the air. Telemachus was watching me. No, I said. I knew the man.
What else have you kept from me? Telegonus demanded. The Minotaur and Trigon and how many others? The Chimera? The Nemean Lion? Cerberus and Scylla?
I had been smiling at his wide-eyed outrage and did not see the blow coming. Where had my son heard her name? Hermes? Ithaca? It did not matter. A cold spear point was twisting in my guts. What had I been thinking? My past was not some game, some adventure table. It was the ugly wreck that storms left rotten on the shore. It was as bad as Odysseus's.
I have said all I will say. Do not ask me again.
I stood and walked away from their startled faces. In my room, I lay on my bed. There were no wolves or lions. They had stayed with my son. Over us somewhere was Athena, watching with her flashing eyes, waiting with her spear to dart at my weakness. I spoke into the shadows. Keep waiting. And though I was sure I would not sleep, I did. I woke clear-headed, determined. I had been tired the night before and drunk more than I was used to, but now I was firm again. I laid out breakfast. When Telegonus came, I saw him eyeing me, waiting for another outburst. But I was pleasant. He should not be so surprised, I thought. I could be pleasant. Telemachus kept his own counsel, but when the meal was finished, he took his brother out to begin fixing the ship. May I use your loom again? Penelope wore a different dress. This one was finer. It had been bleached to a pale cream. It showed off well the dark tones of her skin. You may. I thought of going to the kitchen, but I often cut herbs at the long table near the hearth, and I did not see why I should relegate myself. I brought out the knives and bowls and all the rest. The spells that protected Telegonus did not need to be renewed for another half a moon, so what I did was only for my own pleasure, drying and grinding, distilling tinctures for later use. I thought we would not speak. In our place, Odysseus might have gone on concealing and jockeying just for the pleasure of it. But after so long, I think we had both come to appreciate the value of open conversation. The light slanted through the window, pooling on our bare feet. I asked her about Helen, and she told me stories of when they were children together, swimming in Sparta's rivers and playing at her uncle Tyndareus's court.
We talked of weaving and the best breeds of sheep. I thanked her for offering to teach Telegonus how to swim. She was glad to do it, she said. He reminded her of her cousin Castor, with his eagerness and good humor, his way of easing those around him.
Odysseus drew the well to him, she said. Telegonus runs after, shaping as he goes, like a river carving a channel. It pleased me more than I could say to hear her praise him.
You should have known him as a baby. There was never such a wild creature. Though if I am honest, I was the wilder of the two of us. Motherhood seemed easy to me before I had a child.
Helen's baby was like that, she said.
Hermione. She screamed for half a decade but grew up sweet as anything. I worried that Telemachus did not scream enough, that he was well behaved too soon. I was always curious how a second child might have been different, but by the time Odysseus came home, it seemed that was finished for me. Her voice was matter of fact. Loyal, songs called her later. Faithful and true and prudent. Such passive, pale words for what she was. She could have taken another husband, born another child while Odysseus was gone. Her life would have been easier for it. But she had loved him fiercely and would accept no other. I took down a bunch of yarrow that had been hanging from a roof beam.
What is that used for?
Healing salves. Yarrow stops bleeding.
May I watch? I have never seen witchcraft.
It pleased me as much as her praise of Telegonus. I made room at the table. She was a flattering audience, asking careful questions as I named each ingredient and explained its purpose. She wanted to see the herbs I had used to turn men into pigs. I dropped the dried leaves into her hand.
I'm not about to turn myself into a sow, am I?
You would have to ingest it and speak the words of power. Only those plants fallen from divine blood need no spell to summon their magic. And, I think, you would have to be a witch.
A goddess.
No, I said. My niece was mortal, and she cast spells as strong as mine.
Your niece, she said. You do not mean Medea.
It was strange to hear the name aloud after so long. You know her?
I know what is sung by bards and played in courtyards for kings.
I would hear it, I said. The trees outside clattered in the wind as she talked. Medea had indeed escaped Aetes. She had traveled on to Iolcos with Jason and borne him two sons. But he recoiled from her sorceries and his people despised her. In time, he sought a new marriage with a sweet, well-loved princess from home. Medea praised his wisdom and sent the bride gifts, a crown and a cloak that she had made herself. When the girl put them on, she was burnt alive. Then Medea dragged her children to an altar and, swearing that Jason would never have them, slit their throats. She was last seen summoning a chariot drawn by dragons to take her back to Colchis. The bards had been at the story, no doubt, but I could still see Medea's bright, piercing face. I believed that she would rather set the world on fire than lose. I warned her once that grief would come of her marriage. There is no pleasure in hearing I was right.
There seldom is.
Penelope's voice was soft. She was thinking of those slaughtered children, perhaps. I was thinking of them too. And the dragon chariot that was, of course, my brother's. It seemed incredible that she would go back to him after all that had passed between them. Yet it also made a sort of sense to me. Aetes wanted an heir, and there was none more like him than Medea. She had grown up trained around his cruelty, and in the end it seemed she had not learned how to hold another shape. I poured honey onto the yarrow, added beeswax to bind the salve. The air was musky sweet and sharp with herbs. Penelope said,
What makes a witch, then, if it is not divinity?
I do not know for certain, I said. I once thought it was passed through blood, but Telegonus has no spells in him. I have come to believe it is mostly will. She nodded. I did not have to explain. We knew what will was. That afternoon, Penelope and Telegonus went off again to the bay. I had assumed after my abruptness last night that Telemachus would keep his distance, but he found me at my herbs. I thought I would work on the tables. I watched him while I ground the hellebore leaves. He had a measuring string and a cup he had marked and filled to the line with water.
What are you doing?
testing if the floor is level. Your problem is actually the legs. They are slightly different sizes. It will be easy to adjust.
I watched him using the rasp, checking and rechecking the legs with his length of string. I asked him how he had broken his nose.
Swimming with my eyes closed, he said. I learned my lesson there.
When he was finished, he went out to do the flagstones. I followed, weeding, though the garden scarcely needed it. We discussed bees, how I always wished there were more on the island. He asked if I could tame them like the other creatures.
No, I said.
I use smoke like everyone else.
I saw a hive that looks over full, he said. I can split it in the spring if you like.
I said I would, and watched him scrape away the uneven soil. The roof drains there, I said. Those flagstones will only wobble again after the next rain.
That is how things go. You fix them and they go awry, and then you fix them again.
You have a patient temper.
My father called it dullness. Shearing, cleaning out the hearths, pitting olives. He wanted to know how to do such things for curiosity's sake, but he did not want to actually have to do them.
It was true. Odysseus's favorite task was the sort that only had to be performed once. Raiding a town, defeating a monster, finding a way inside an impenetrable city. Perhaps you get it from your mother. He did not look up, but I saw him tense.
How is she? I know you speak to her.
She misses you.
She knows where I am.
The anger stood out plain and clean on his face. There was a sort of innocence to him, I thought. I do not mean this as the poets mean it, a virtue to be broken by the story's end or else upheld at greatest cost. Nor do I mean that he was foolish or guileless. I mean that he was made only of himself, without the dregs that clog the rest of us. He thought and felt and acted, and all these things made a straight line. No wonder his father had been so baffled by him. He would have been always looking for the hidden meaning, the knife in the dark. But Telemachus carried his blade in the open. They were strange days. Athena hung over our heads like an axe, yet so she had hung for 16 years. I would hardly faint at it now. Every morning Telegonus took his brother out upon the island. Penelope spun or wove while I shaped my herbs. I had drawn my son aside by then and told him some of what I had learned of Odysseus's worsening temper on Ithaca, his suspicions and angers, and day by day I saw the knowledge work upon him. He still grieved, but the guilt began to ease, and the brightness came back to his face. Penelope and Telemachus's presence helped still more. He basked in their attention like my lions in a patch of sun. It panged me to realize how much he had wanted family all these years. Penelope and Telemachus still did not speak to each other. Hour after hour, meal after meal, the air between them was brittle. It seemed absurd to me that they did not just confess their faults and sorrows and be done, but they were like eggs, each afraid to crack the other. In the afternoons, Telemachus always seemed to find some task that brought him near, and we would talk until the sun touched the sea. When I went inside to set out the plates for dinner, he followed. If there was work enough for two, he helped. If there was not, he sat at the hearth carving small pieces of wood, a bull, a bird, a whale breaching the waves. His hands had a precise, careful economy that I admired. He was no witch, but he had the temperament for it. I told him that the floor would clean itself, but he always swept the sawdust and wood curls after. It was strange to have such constant company. Telegonus and I had mostly kept out of each other's way, and my nymphs had been more like shadows flitting at the corner of my eye. Usually even that much presence wore on me, nagging at my attention until I had to leave and walk the island alone. But there was a contained quality to Telemachus, a quiet assurance that made him companionable without being intrusive. The creature he most reminded me of, I realized, was my lion. They had the same upright dignity, the same steady gaze with deep-set humor, even the same earthbound grace, which pursued their own ends while I pursued mine.
What's so funny? He asked me.
I shook my head. It was perhaps the 6th day since they had come, He was making an olive tree, shaping the twisting trunk, picking out each knot and hole with his knife's point. "Do you miss Ithaca?" I asked him. He considered.
"I miss those I knew, and I am sorry not to see my goats breed."
He paused.
"I think I would not have been a bad king."
"Telemachus the Just," I said. He smiled.
"That's what they call you if you're so boring they can't think of something better."
"I think you would be a good king also," I said. "Perhaps you still can be. The memories of men are short. You could return in glory as the long-awaited heir, bringing prosperity with the rightness of your blood."
"It sounds like a good story," he said. "But what would I do in those rooms that my father and the suitors filled up? Every step would be a memory I wished I did not have."
"It must be difficult for you to be near Telegonus." His brow creased.
"Why would it be?"
"Because he looks so much like your father."
He laughed. "What are you talking about? Telegonus is stamped from you. I do not just mean your face. It is your gestures, your walk, your way of speaking, even your voice."
"You make it sound like a curse," I said.
"It is no curse," he said.
Our eyes met across the air. Far away, my hands were peeling pomegranates for dinner. Methodically, I scored the rind, revealed the white lattice. Within, the red juice pips glowed through their waxy cells. My mouth stung a little with thirst. I had been watching myself with him. It was a novelty to me, noticing the expressions shaping themselves on my face, the movement of my words across my tongue. So much of my life had been spent plunged up to the elbows, tacking now here, now there, spattered and impulsive. This new feeling crept over me like a sort of distant sleepiness, almost a languor. This was not the first speaking look that he had given me, but what did it matter? My son was his brother. His father had been in my bed. He was owed to Athena. I knew it, even if he did not. Outside, the seasons had turned. The sky opened its hands, and the earth swelled to meet it. The light poured thickly down, coating us in gold. The sea lagged only a little behind. At breakfast, Telegonus clapped his brother on the back. "In another few days, we can take the boat out in the bay." I felt Penelope's glance. "How far does the spell extend?" I did not know. Somewhere beyond the breakers, but I could not name the exact wave. I said, "Don't forget, Telegonus, there's always one last bad storm. Wait till then." As if in answer, a knock sounded on the door. In the silence that followed, Telegonus whispered, "The wolves did not howl." No, I did not look at Penelope in warning. If she did not guess, she was a fool. I drew my divinity up, cold and bracing around me, and went to open the door. Those same black eyes, that same perfect and handsome face. I heard my son gasp, felt the frozen stillness behind me. "Daughter of Helios, may I come in?"
"No."
He lifted an eyebrow.
"I have a message that concerns one of your guests."
I felt a grating fear along my ribs, but I kept my voice flat. "They can hear you where you stand."
"Very well."
His skin glowed. His drawling, smirking manner vanished. This was the divine messenger of the gods, potent and inevitable.
"Telemachus, Prince of Ithaca, I come on behalf of the great goddess Athena, who would speak with you. She requires that the witch Circe lower the spell that bars her from the isle." "Requires," I said. "That's an interesting word for one who tried to kill my son. Who is to say she does not plan to try again?" "She is not interested in your son in the least." He dropped his glory. His voice was casual once more. "If you will be a fool about it, these are her words, of course, she offers an oath of protection for him. It is Telemachus alone she wants. It is time for him to take his inheritance."
He looked past me to the table.
"Do you hear, Prince?"
Telemachus's eyes were lowered.
"I hear. I am humbled by messenger and message both. But I am a guest on this island. I must await my hostess's word."
Hermes cocked his head a little, his eyes intent.
"Well, hostess,
I felt Penelope at my back, risen like an autumn moon. She had asked for time to mend things with Telemachus, and she had not done it yet. I could imagine her bitter thoughts.
I will do it, I said. But it will take some effort to unwind the spell's working.
She may expect to come in 3 days.
You want me to tell the daughter of Zeus she has to wait 3 days?
They have been here half a month. If she was in a hurry, she should have sent you earlier. And you may tell her those are my words. Amusement flashed in his eyes. I had fed off that look once, when I had been starving and thought such crumbs a feast.
Be sure I will.
We breathed into the empty space he left behind. Penelope met my eye.
Thank you, she said.
Then she turned to Telemachus.
Son.
It was the first time I had heard her speak to him directly.
I have made you wait too long. Will you walk with me?
Chapter 24. We watched them go down the path to the shore. Telemachus looked half stunned, but that was only natural. He had learned he was Athena's chosen and would make peace with his mother in the same moment. I had wanted to say something to him before he left, but no words had come. Telegonus bumped at my elbow.
What did Hermes mean?
Telemachus's inheritance. I shook my head. Just that morning, I had seen the first green buds of spring. Athena had timed it well. She came as soon as she could make Telemachus sail.
I am surprised the spell takes 3 days to undo. Can't you use that, what's it called? Moly.
I turned to him. You know my spells are governed by my will. If I let go, they will fall in a second. So no, it does not take 3 days. He frowned.
You lied to Hermes. Won't Athena be angry when she finds out?
His innocence could still frighten me. I do not plan to tell her. Telegonus, these are gods. You must keep your tricks close or you will lose everything.
You did it so they would have time to talk, he said.
Penelope and Telemachus. Young he was, but not a fool. Something like that. He tapped his finger on the shutters. The lions did not stir. They knew the noise of his restlessness well.
Will we see them again, if they leave?
I think you will, I said. If he heard the change I made, he said nothing. I could feel my chest heaving a little. It had been so long since I had spoken to Hermes. I'd forgotten the effort it took to face down that shrewd, all-seeing gaze. He said, Do you think Athena will try to kill me? She must swear an oath before she comes. She will be bound by it. But I will have the spear, in case. I made my hands work through their chores, plates and washing and weeding. When it began to grow dark, I packed a basket of food and sent Telegonus to find Penelope and Telemachus.
Don't linger, I said. They should be alone.
He reddened.
I am not an idiot child.
I drew in a breath.
I know you are not.
I paced while he was gone. I could not explain the stinging tension I felt. I had known he would be leaving. I had known all along. Penelope returned when the moon rose.
I am grateful to you, she said. Life is not so simple as a loom. What you weave, you cannot unravel with a tug. But I think I have made a start.
Is it wrong of me to confess that I enjoyed watching you set Hermes back? I have a confession of my own. I am not sorry to let Athena twist for 3 days. She smiled.
Thank you, again.
Telegonus sat at the hearth, fletching arrows. He had scarcely managed a handful. He was as restless as I was, scuffing at the stones, staring out of the window at the empty garden path as if Hermes might appear again. I cleaned the tables that did not need cleaning. I set my pots of herbs, now here, now there. Penelope's black mourning cloak hung from the loom, nearly finished. I could have sat and worked a while, but the change of hands would show in the cloth. I'm going out, I told Telegonus, and before he could speak, I left. My feet carried me to a small hollow I knew among the oaks and olives. The branches made good shade, and the grass grew soft. You could listen to the night birds overhead. He was sitting on a fallen tree, outlined against the dark.
Do I disturb you?
No, he said. I sat beside him. Beneath my feet, the grass was cool and faintly damp. The owls cried in the distance, still hungry from winter's scarcity. My mother told me what you did for us, both now and before. Thank you. I'm glad if it helped. He nodded faintly. She has been 3 leagues ahead, as always. Over us, the branches stirred, carving the moon into slivers. Are you ready to face the grey-eyed goddess?
Is anyone?
You have seen her before, at least, when she stopped the war between your father and the suitor's kin.
I've seen her many times, he said. She used to come to me when I was a child. Never in her own form. I would notice a quality to certain people around me. You know, the stranger with overly detailed advice. The old family friend whose eyes shine in the dark. The air would smell like buttery olives and iron. I would speak her name, and the sky would glow bright as polished silver. The dull things of my life, the hangnail on my thumb, the suitor's taunts, would fade. She made me feel like one of the heroes from songs, ready to tame fire-breathing bulls and sow dragon's teeth.
An owl circled on its silent wings. In the quiet, the yearning in his voice rang like a bell.
After my father returned, I never saw her again. For a long time I waited. I killed ewes in her name. I scrutinized everyone who passed. Did that goat herd linger strangely? Was not that sailor too interested in my thoughts?
He made a sound in the dark, a half laugh.
You can imagine people didn't love me for it, always staring at them, then turning away in disappointment.
Do you know what she intends for you?
Who can say with a god?
Felt it like a rebuke, that old, uncrossable gulf between mortal and divinity. You will have power, certainly, and wealth. You will likely have your chance to be Telemachus the Just. His eyes rested on the shadows of the forest. He had scarcely glanced at me since I came. Whatever had been between us was dispersed like smoke on the wind. His mind was with Athena, pointed at his future. I had known it would be so, but it surprised me how much it ached to see it happen so quickly. I spoke briskly. You should take the boat, of course. It's charmed against sea disaster, as you know. With her help, you shouldn't need that. But it will let you leave as soon as you are ready. Telegonus will not mind. He was quiet so long, I thought he had not heard. But at last he said, That is a kind offer. Thank you. Then you will have your island back. I heard the crackles in the brush. I heard the sea distant on the shore, the sound of our breaths vanishing into its ceaseless wash. Yes, I said, I will. In the days that followed, I passed him as if he were a table in my hall. Penelope eyed me, but I did not speak to her either. The two of them were often together now, mending what had been broken. I did not care to see it. I took Telegonus down to the sea to show me his swimming, his shoulders hard with muscle cut unerring through the sea. He looked older than 16, a man grown. Children of gods always came to their strength faster than mortals. He would miss them when they were gone, I knew. But I would find something else for him. I would help him forget. I would say, some people are like constellations that only touch the earth for a season. I set out their evening meals, then took my cloak and walked into the darkness. I sought the highest peaks, the breaks where mortals could not follow me. Even as I did it, I laughed at myself. Which of them do you think is going to chase after you? My mind turned through all those stories I had kept from Odysseus, Aeetes and Scylla, and the rest. I had not wanted my history to be only an amusement, grist for his relentless intelligence. But who else would have tolerated it? With all its ugliness and errors, I had missed my chance to speak, and now it was too late. I went to bed. I dreamed till dawn of the spear tipped with Trigon's tail. The morning of the third day, Penelope touched me on the sleeve. She had finished the black cloak. It made her face look thinner, her skin dulled. She said, I know I ask much, but will you be there when we speak to her?
I will. And Telegonus, too. I want it finished and clear. I am tired of games.
All my words felt like that, hard in my teeth. I strode up to the peak. The rocks there were darkened from 16 years of my drafts. I reached down, rubbed my finger against the pitted stains. So many times I had come here, so many hours spent. I closed my eyes and felt the spell above me. Fragile as glass, I let it fall. There was the faintest ping, like the snap of an overdrawn bowstring. I waited for the old weight to drop from my shoulders, but instead a grey fatigue rolled through me. I put out my hand for balance and found only air. I staggered, knees wavering, but there was no time for such weakness. We were exposed. Athena was coming, arrowing down upon my island like an eagle in her dive. I made myself start down the mountain. My feet caught on every root, the rocks turned my ankles. My breath came thin and shallow. I opened the door. Three faces startled up to mine. Telegonus rose. Mother? I pushed past him. My sky lay open and each moment was a danger. The spear, that is what I needed. I seized its crooked shaft from the corner where I kept it and breathed the sweet poison scent. My mind seemed to clear a little. Even Athena would not risk this. I carried it into the hall and set myself at the hearth. Uncertainly, they followed. There was no time for a warning. Her lightning bolt limbs struck the room and the air turned silver. Her breastplate glowed as if it were still half molten. The crest of her helmet bristled over us. Her eyes fixed on me. Her voice was dark as ore. I told you that you would be sorry if he lived.
You were wrong, I said.
You have always been insolent, Titan. Sharply, as if to wound me with her precision, she turned her gaze to Telemachus. He was kneeling, Penelope beside him.
Son of Odysseus, she said.
Her voice changed, gilding itself.
Zeus has foretold that a new empire will rise in the west. Aeneas is fled there with his remnant Trojans, and I would have Greeks to balance and hold them at bay. The land is fertile and rich, thick with beasts of field and forest, overhung with fruits of every kind. You will found a prosperous city there. You will build stout walls and set down laws to hold back the tide of savagery. You will seed a great people who will rule in ages to come. I have gathered good men from across our lands and set them on a ship. They arrive this day to bear you to your future.
The room burned with the aureate sparks of her vision. Telemachus burned too. His shoulders seemed broader, his limbs swollen with strength. Even his voice had deepened.
Goddess, he said, grey-eyed and wise, I am honored among mortals. No man can deserve such grace.
She smiled like a temple snake over its bowl of cream.
The ship will come for you at dusk. Be ready.
It was his cue to stand, to show off that glory she had bestowed on him, lift it like a glittering standard. But he knelt, unmoving.
I fear I am not worthy of your gifts.
I frowned. Why was he groveling so much? It was not wise. He should thank her and be done before she found some reason for offense. Her voice had a tinge of impatience.
I know your weaknesses, she said. They will not matter when I am there to steady your spear arm. I guided you once to victory against the suitors. I will guide you again.
You have watched over me, he said. I thank you for it, yet I cannot accept.
The air in the room hung utterly still.
What do you mean?
The words sizzled.
I have considered, he said. For 3 days I have considered. And I find in myself no taste for fighting Trojans or building empires. I seek different days.
My throat had gone dry. What was the fool doing? The last man who refused Athena was Paris, prince of Troy. He had preferred the goddess Aphrodite, and now he was dead, and his city ash. Her eyes were augurs, boring through the air.
No taste? What is this? Has some other god offered you something better?
No.
What then?
He did not flinch from her gaze.
I do not desire such a life.
Penelope, the word was a lash. Speak to your son.
Penelope's face was bent to the floor.
I have, goddess. He has set in his course.
You know his father's blood was always stubborn.
Stubborn in achievement.
Athena snapped each word like a dove's neck.
In ingenuity. What is this degeneracy?
She swung back to Telemachus.
I do not make this offer again. If you persist in this foolishness, if you refuse me, all my glory will leave you. Even if you beg, I will not come.
I understand, he said. His calmness seemed to enrage her.
There will be no songs made of you. No stories, do you understand? You will live a life of obscurity. You will be without a name in history. You will be no one.
Each word was like the blow of a hammer in a forge.
He would give in, I thought. Of course he would.
The fame she had described was what all mortals yearn for. It is their only hope of immortality.
I choose that fate, he said.
Disbelief shone naked on her cold, beautiful face. How many times in her eternity had she been told no? She could not pass it. She looked like an eagle who had been diving upon a rabbit and the next moment found itself in the mud.
You are a fool, she spat. You are lucky I do not kill you where you stand. I spare you out of love for your father, but I am patron to you no more.
The glory that had shone upon him vanished. He looked shriveled without it, grey and gnarled as olive bark. I was as shocked as Athena. What had he done? And so wrapped was I in these thoughts that I could not see the path we walked until it was too late.
Telegonus,
Athena said. Her silver gaze darted to him. Her voice changed again. Its iron grew filigree.
You have heard what I offered your brother. I offer it to you now. Will you sail and be my bulwark in Italy?
I felt as though I had slipped from a cliff. I was in the air, falling, with nothing to hold me.
Son,
I cried.
Say nothing.
Fast as an arrow shot, she turned on me.
You dare to obstruct me again. What more do you want from me, witch? I have sworn an oath. I will not harm him. I offer him a gift that men would trade their souls for. Will you keep him hobbled all his life like a broken horse? You do not want him, I said. He killed Odysseus. Odysseus killed himself, she said.
The words hissed through the room like a scythe's blade.
He lost his way.
It was you who made him lose it.
Anger smoked in her eyes. I saw the thought in them, how her spearhead would look, tearing the blood from my throat.
I would have made him a god, she said. An equal. But in the end, he was too weak.
It was all the apology you would ever get from a god. I bared my teeth and slashed the spear tip through the air.
You will not have my son. I will fight you before I let you take him.
Mother, the voice was soft at my side. May I speak? I was breaking to pieces. I knew what I would see when I looked at him. His eager, pleading hope. He wanted to go. He had always wanted to go, from the moment he was born into my arms. I had let Penelope stay on my island so she would not lose her son. I would lose mine instead. I have dreamed of this, he said, of golden fields that stretch out unbroken to the horizon, orchards, gleaming rivers, thriving flocks. I used to think it was Ithaca I saw. He was trying to speak gently, to rein in the excitement that rose in him like a flood. I thought of Icarus, who had died when he was free. Telegonus would die if he were not in flesh and years, but all that was sweet in him would wither and fall away. He took my hand. The gesture was like a bard's. But were we not in a sort of song? This was the refrain we had practiced so often. There is risk. I know it. But you have taught me to be careful. I can do this, Mother. I want to. I was a grey space filled up with nothing. What could I say? One of us must grieve. I would not let it be him. My son, I said. It is yours to decide. Joy broke from him like a wave. I turned away so I would not have to see it. Athena would be glad, I thought. Here was her vengeance at last.
Be ready for the ship, she said. It comes this afternoon.
I do not send another. The light faded back to simple sun. Penelope and Telemachus eased away. Telegonus embraced me as he had not since he was a child, as maybe he never had. Remember this, I told myself. His wide shoulders, the curve of the bones in his back, the warmth of his breath. But my mind felt parched and windswept. Mother, can you not be happy for me? No, I wanted to shout at him. No, I cannot. Why must I be happy? Is it not enough that I let you go? But I did not want that to be the last he saw of me, his mother shrieking and keening as if he were dead, though he was still filled with so many hopeful years. I am happy for you, I made myself say. I led him to his room. I helped him pack, filling trunks with medicines of every sort for wounds and headaches, for pox and sleeplessness, and even childbirth, which he blushed at. You are founding a dynasty, I said. Heirs are usually necessary. I gave him all the warmest clothes I had, though it was spring and would be summer soon. I said he should take Arcturus, who had loved him since she was a puppy. I pressed amulets on him, wrapped him in enchantments. I piled on treasure after treasure, gold and silver and finest embroidery, for new kings fare best when they have wonders to give. He had sobered by then. What if I fail? I thought of the land Athena had described, the rolling hills crowded with their heavy fruits and fields of grain, the bright citadel he would build. He would hand down judgments from a lofted chair in its sunniest hall, and men and women would come from far and wide to kneel to him. He will be a good ruler, I thought, fair-minded and warm. He will not be consumed like his father was. He had never been hungry for glory, only for life. You will not fail, I said. You do not think she means some harm to me. Now he was worried. Now that it was too late. He was only 16, so new in the world. No, I said, I do not. She values you for your blood, and in time she will value you for yourself as well. She is more reliable than Hermes, though no god can be called steady. You must remember to be your own man. I will. He met my eyes. You're not angry? No, I said. It had never truly been anger, only fear and sorrow. He was what the gods could use against me. A knock on the door. Telemachus, carrying a long wool parcel. I'm sorry to intrude. His eyes kept away from mine. He held out the package to my son. This is for you. Telegonus unwrapped the cloth. He smoothed the length of wood, tapered at its ends, and notched. The bowstrings were coiled neatly around it. Telegonus stroked the leather grip. It is beautiful. It was our father's, Telemachus said. Telegonus looked up, stricken. I saw a shadow of the old grief pass across his face. Brother, I cannot. I have already taken your city. That city was never mine, he said. Nor was this. You will do better with them both, I think. I felt as though I stood a long way distant. I had never seen the age between them so clearly before. My keen son and this man who chose to be no one. We carried Telegonus's bags down to the shore. Telemachus and Penelope said their farewells, then stood back. I waited beside my son, but he scarcely knew it. His eyes had found the horizon, that seam of waves and sky. The ship came into the harbor. It was large, its sides fresh with resin and paint, its new sail shining. Its men worked cleanly, efficiently. Their beards were trimmed, their bodies honed with strength. When the gangplank was dropped, they gathered eagerly at the rail. Telegonus stepped forward to meet them. He stood broad and bright with sun. Arcturus heeled, panting at his side. His father's bow was strung and hanging from his shoulder. I am Telegonus of Aiaia, he cried out, son of a great hero and a greater goddess. Welcome, for you have been led here by grey-eyed Athena herself. The sailors dropped to their knees. I would not be able to bear it, I thought. I would seize him, hold him to me. But I only embraced him a final time, pressing hard as if to set him into my skin. Then I watched him take his place among them, stand upon the prow, outlined against the sky. The light darted silver from the waves. I lifted my hand in blessing and gave my son to the world. In the days that followed, Penelope and Telemachus treated me as if I were Egyptian glass. They spoke softly and walked on light feet past my chair. Penelope offered me the place at the loom. Telemachus kept my cup filled. The fire was always freshly stoked. All of it slid away. They were kind, but they were nothing to me. The syrups in my pantry had been my companions longer. I went to my herbs, but they seemed to shrivel in my fingers. The air felt naked without my spell. Gods might come and go as they wished now. They might do anything. I had no power to stop them. The days grew warmer. The sky softened, opening over us like the ripe flesh of a fruit. The spear still leaned in my room. I went to it, took off the sheath to breathe over its pale, envenomed ridges. But what I wanted from it I could not say. I rubbed at my chest as if it were bread I needed. Telemachus said, "Are you well?" "Of course I am well. What could be wrong with me? Immortals do not take sick." I went to the beach. I walked carefully, as if I held an infant in my arms. The sun beat upon the horizon. It beat everywhere, upon my back and arms and face. I wore no shawl. I would not burn. I never did. My island lay around me, my herbs, my house, my animals. And so it would go, I thought, on and on, forever the same. It did not matter if Penelope and Telemachus were kind. It did not matter even if they stayed for their whole lives. If she were the friend I yearned for and he was something else, it would only be a blink. They would wither, and I would burn their bodies and watch my memories of them yellow and fade as everything faded in the endless wash of centuries, even Daedalus, even the blood spatter of the Minotaur, even Scylla's appetites, even Telegonus. 60, 70 years a mortal might have. Then he would leave for the underworld, where I could never go. For gods are the opposite of death. I tried to imagine those dusky hills and grey meadows, the shades moving slow and white among them. Some walked hand in hand with those they had loved in life. Some waited, secure that one day their beloved would come. And for those who had not loved, whose lives had been filled with pain and horror, there was the Black River Lethe, where one might drink and forget. Some consolation. For me, there was nothing. I would go on through the countless millennia, while everyone I met ran through my fingers, and I was left with only those who were like me, the Olympians and Titans, my sister and brothers, my father. I felt something in me then. It was like the old early days of my spells, when the path would open, sudden and clear before my feet. All those years I had wrestled and fought, yet there was a part of me that had stood still. Just as my sister said, I seemed to hear that pale creature in his black depths. "Then, child, make another." I did nothing to prepare. If I was not ready now, when would I be? I did not even walk up to the peak. He could come here, upon my yellow sands, and face me where I stood. "Father," I said into the air, "I would speak with you."